Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Today is the 14th of April, 2015, and today we are joined on the line by Sean Dagan-Wood, the editor-in-chief of positivenews.org.uk, a website whose about section features the phrase, "Positive News is the world's first publication dedicated to reporting positive developments. We take a solution-focused perspective on the challenges facing society. Through compelling and rigorous journalism, we aim to inform, inspire, and empower our readers while helping create a more balanced and constructive media," which I'm sure listeners of the Corbett Report do not have to be told is very much the direction in which I have been trying to and will continue to try to take the Corbett Report itself. So Sean Dagan-Wood, it's great to have you on the program today to talk about positive news. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
You're welcome. Thanks very much for inviting me on.
Excellent. Well, perhaps you can just explain a little bit about yourself and your background and how you came to be associated with positive news.
Sure. Personally, I've always had a strong interest in the human potential. And through my own life experiences and seeing the change taking place in the world and the things that other people have dealt with, what's always inspired me is that possibility for transformation and my personal belief in human nature and in what we can achieve individually and collectively as a society. And I always felt that the overall story that the news was telling us about who we are and about our world and about the possibilities for us, that it didn't resonate with what I really felt to be true, which was why I was drawn to positive reporting, because I felt that it could offer more of a balanced picture, that it could present a fuller picture of truth to show the positive change that's taking place in the world and the potential solutions to the problems we face. And in creating that fuller picture, that it could inspire us, it could empower us individually and collectively to bring out the best in our nature, to catalyze our creativity and our innovation, and to show us all these possibilities that are out there for us. And I feel that with that balance, that then journalism could do an even better job of really serving society.
Well, that is quite a journalistic mission statement, and one that I wished more of the mainstream media would adhere to. But since they don't seem to be, I guess it's up to the alternative media to start really revolutionizing what we can do in this medium of journalism. And on that note, I will admit that I first came across yourself and your website through a post about a speaking event that was recently held in London called "Can We Change the News for Good?" in which you were speaking. With yourself and Martin Lewis were both speaking at that event, talking about this idea of positive journalism. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that the answer to that question, "Can we change the news for good?" is yes. But perhaps more to the point, how do we go about doing that? What is the way to do this? I'm assuming that this is not about just reporting on cats in trees and puppy dogs and rainbows. I'm assuming that there's a different approach being offered here.
Yeah, that's entirely true. And it's now an approach which the mainstream press is starting to open up to. I think there's a combination of reasons for that. One of the major ones, of course, is that the digital world has really disrupted journalism, and media are looking for new business models. And there's new media voices rising, and audiences are engaging with new kinds of content and new media organizations and sources of information. So in trying to capture and maintain audience, the media are looking for new approaches. And one of these is the growing field of constructive journalism. And constructive journalism is the kind of reporting approach that we take. And like you say, it's not just about what we're reporting on. So firstly, at Positive News, we're focused on stories which really show the positive developments that are taking place in the world that really have social value, that are really relevant to us and to creating a kind of society where we can all thrive. So it's not fluffy, happy stories. And those are the kind of stories that traditionally, and rightfully so, that the press were very cautious about, you know, stories that really didn't feel like they mattered that much. But what we're showing now is that we can tell stories, we can report on the world in a way that covers things that are really important and relevant to us, but also have more positive elements within them. So this is the approach with constructive journalism, that we can report on something that might even be a piece of bad news. Say, let's take the issue of homelessness, for example. We might be reporting some figures on homelessness, but at the same time, we can come at it with a different angle. We can find examples of how homeless people might have turned their lives around, or how in a certain community the homeless rate has been dramatically reduced, and expose why that's happened. And then, you know, tell people about those instances where positive change is happening. And we're finding that that can actually be a really compelling way to engage audiences. And what we're seeing from social media in particular is that those kind of stories are really highly shared and they're really engaging. Positive stories are getting way more shares than their negative counterparts. And this is really starting to cause shifts in the media.
Well, let's make this concrete for the listeners out there. Let's take a look at a specific example that's up on positivenews.org.uk right now that has 3,300 Facebook likes on this page already. Portugal addiction rates halved after community, not jail, is trialed as solution. And that starts off by saying UK politicians have been urged to decriminalize the use and possession of most drugs after addiction rates in Portugal were cut by half following decriminalization in the country almost 15 years ago. Instead of being jailed, drug users in Portugal were encouraged to reconnect with their feelings and the wider community. Since then, the number of people addicted to heroin has halved, and rates of HIV infection and drug-related deaths have decreased. I mean, this is, I think, a perfect example, because this is, I think, by anyone's standards, a real important news story about a very important social phenomenon, but one that looks at it from a very different angle that I think is not reported on usually by a lot of the British mainstream outlets, because that seems to be off of the political table altogether. So I think this is a way of perhaps redefining those boundaries of acceptable discourse.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important part of it. It's about looking again at what news really is, and breaking down those assumptions about what news is. And we're showing that, you know, news shouldn't just be about what's violent, about conflict, about disaster. That yes, those things are important, and holding power to account and exposing wrongdoing is essential. But what a growing body of research is showing is that if we only do that, if we only stick to these same narratives about crime and disaster, then actually it leaves people feeling disempowered. It has a negative effect on our mental health. It has a negative impact on how we engage in society. And the emerging research is showing that when we have more positive elements within stories and report more positive news, it has a positive effect on our well-being. It leaves us feeling more engaged rather than feeling passive and helpless. So we're more likely to voice our opinions or to take an action such as donating to charity, for example. So it's about breaking down those assumptions about what news is, and also challenging the conventional narrative about what's important. Because behind the kind of typical political economic story and the stories of violence and crime and conflict, which is only a very narrow part of what's taking place in the world, there's way more happening that's of real importance and that people want to know about, especially at the grassroots level. There's all these positive seeds, like what's happening in Portugal. When we give them our attention, then there's so much that we can gain as a society in terms of what we can learn that we can take to our own lives and to our organizations and our social and economic systems.
Well, let's just back up what you were saying there about the research, which is increasingly showing how important this positive news phenomenon is. I'm reading from an article that was published on the site last year called Good News Doesn't Just Cheer Us Up, which notes that according to research published by the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, when people are experiencing acts of extraordinary moral goodness, they can experience moral elevation, a psychological condition that contributes to the development of positive thoughts and emotions such as admiration, affection, and love. It can even cause physical reactions that cause a lasting influence on people's future actions. So we're talking about identifiable, actual, real results that happen in individuals, both psychologically and physically, that can literally change their lives just based on the experiences they have and what type of media they are exposed to. I think that's pretty significant and probably should play a role in what we choose to feed ourselves on a daily basis, whether it's just fear porn, as is common, I think, in a lot of mainstream outlets, or something that can actually be solutions based. So I assume that in the course of your work, you've had the chance to observe this effect on the readership of Positive News and people you interact with. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, that's totally the case. And this new research is incredibly fascinating and very useful for journalism. And you can look at it from the psychology point of view. But also you can then link that with research that looks at the biochemistry of what's happening, which is what you alluded to, that you know, the emotional impact of journalism is very significant in terms of how it affects us psychologically, but also biochemically. And you know, research into positive emotions, for example, shows that when we experience positive emotions, the chemical oxytocin is released, and that chemical is associated with trust. So we've got to consider how the way we frame information in the news is affecting our trust of other people. The effect that I observe with our audience is incredible. When we report all these positive stories, it energizes people, it motivates people, it gives people a sense of their own potential. And this is something that I've really felt working with these stories. I think it opens our mind to possibility. I think that's a good thing for society. And so by bringing more positive elements into reporting, we're going to benefit social cohesion, we're going to benefit people's mental health, and we're going to bring out the creativity and innovation and the skills that we need to face challenges that we do in this world. So the idea that, you know, that just exposing what's going wrong is what journalism needs to do so that people can act to fix it, is undermined by the research. So of course there's very good intentions in journalism, you know, especially in investigative journalism, when we expose all this wrongdoing, and that has a role. But at the same time, when we expose potential solutions, when we expose people's strengths, when we expose positive responses to situations, at the same time, that's going to be much more empowering. And for me, it comes down to the key way in which we engage our readers and grab their attention. Are we triggering fear, or are we triggering the human potential, the human spirit? And recent research shows that a very powerful way of grabbing people's attention, rather than using fear and anger, is through the experience of awe. People are really engaged by content that triggers awe and meaning. So I think if we want to take responsibility for our journalism, then we need to be doing more of that.
I think you're exactly right about that, although sometimes it can be difficult to think about how we actually implement this in specific cases. So as a coincidence, we've had this interview planned for weeks now, but as a coincidence, here at the Corbett Report, we've been involved in an open source investigation with the Corbett Report members for a few months now on the concept of political pedophilia rings and the Westminster scandal that's coming to light right now. Some of the most horrific material that you can imagine dealing with that, as you say, does need to be exposed. There is a genuine desire and need for this information to come out and power to be held to accountability for its abuses. But it is one of those subjects that is just almost overwhelming in the horror of what's taken place. How do we approach such a topic from the perspective of solutions-based or positive news?
Well, I think there's different approaches which can be applied to different issues. And it's not the case that, you know, there's always a positive story. So it should never be forced. But with anything, there is usually a seed of change, a seed of hope. And it's taking a constructive mindset to an issue and looking for those things and bringing them into the equation. So, you know, something, a topic as difficult as paedophilia, then of course, the main focus will be exposing what's happened, which is so necessary, and holding those involved to account. But at the same time, we can look at the organisations that are helping victims, the organisations that are helping perpetrators to try and change the causes, the individual or social causes that might be causing that kind of thing to happen. So in looking at ways that the core issues are being dealt with and you know, the essentially, it's looking for those avenues for healing the problem itself.
Or at least identifying the conditions through which such a situation can arise, and then seeing if that can be dealt with directly. I think perhaps...
Exactly.
I think perhaps one of the... Please, go ahead.
So I was going to say, give a couple of examples that we've recently published. You know, would be the issue of bullying, for example. We can report on the state of bullying in schools, and we ran a story about a worldwide program called Roots of Empathy, where young babies are being brought into schools and are interacting with the school children. And these children are increasing their emotional intelligence as a response. Their bullying levels are reducing in the schools, levels of aggression are reducing. And there's now really hard data worldwide that's showing that this is the case. So that's a really exciting project. And we had a large amount of traffic to that article. And we're still able to expose the issues of bullying while reporting from that angle of where is it being dealt with well. Or in Syria, reporting on the situation in Syria through the lens of how volunteer citizens are staying put in war zones and rescuing people from under the rubble, no matter what side of the conflict they're on. And it's just a way into a story that where you can still inform people about the core facts, but offer a slightly different lens.
That is interesting, because, of course, it brings to my mind the fact that the idea of basically dividing kids up by their age and putting children of like age in the same classroom to be taught throughout their youth is an extremely arbitrary thing that has only been done for a relatively short amount of time. Before that, of course, we had schoolhouses where often wide numbers of children would be grouped together, not just by age. So I think there's a lot to consider with a story like that that can really start to question some of the ways that our society itself is organized. But I think one of the fundamental ways that this whole a positive news phenomenon can really challenge some of our core ideas about media and what it does is to challenge us as an audience not to see ourselves as mere spectators of events or merely people who are just watching things unfold and thus have to rely on organizations outside of ourselves to deal with those problems. I think it can at least potentially highlight the fact that we as individuals have ways that we can actually affect these or address these issues, which I think is often the excluded part from sort of traditional journalism. What's your take on that idea?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think... having more positive stories are very empowering in that way. And that's certainly something that I individually felt when I came to this kind of reporting. I think, you know, constructive journalism is very much about showing how those people not in power can have an impact in the world. And part of that is in how we report it. It's not leaving people feeling cynical and hopeless, which is very disabling. It's a very disabling way of viewing and experiencing the world. Whereas if we see these positive examples and we see a broader, fuller picture of the truth, then it gives us the opportunity to look to our own potential to take action. So really, I think a more balanced approach creates a more fertile ground for people to respond to the world. And, you know, journalism is supposed to be about informing people in a way where we're then empowered to make responsible, free decisions about how we respond to the world around us.
Well, then, finally, you did mention earlier that this is a trend that is being picked up on more and more and adopted even by the mainstream to a certain extent. Tell us about the sort of rising tide of positive news.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. It's happening very rapidly and all around the world now. There's online media dedicated to positive reporting, following in the footsteps of positive news that are cropping up on every continent. But also the mainstream press is increasingly taking interest in the approach of constructive journalism. And our sister organisation, the Constructive Journalism Project, for example, based on the academic research, is developing practical tools that we're now delivering in universities worldwide and in newsrooms to give media organisations and journalists the tools to follow this constructive approach. And there's mainstream press organisations and broadcasters in the US, in Scandinavia, in France and other places in Europe who are now taking on these techniques. So I think we're going to see a lot of change over the coming months and years, which is very exciting. You know, major news organisations such as Huffington Post just announced a global editorial strategy to focus on quality journalism about what's working in the world. The Washington Post and New York Times have sections for solution for stories, and this they're starting to crop up all over now. So it's a very, very promising trend.
It is a promising trend, but you'll forgive me if I'm more excited about the online and alternative variety than I am about the New York Times or what have you. Let's lead the way and let them follow in our wake. So let's continue to destroy the old media paradigm. Sean Dakinwood, let's direct people once again to positivenews.org.uk, where they can find more examples of these types of news stories on a daily basis. Are there any other places you'd like to direct people for more information about this?
I just direct people to constructivejournalism.org, which was the training initiative that we mentioned, in case anyone's interested in that. But yeah, please check out positivenews.org.uk, and hope you find the stories informing and inspiring.
I certainly have myself. I trust the listeners will too. Sean, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.